FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 12/27/17, just four more days to go. Well, I figured we'd like to look around, try to figure out what's coming at us in 2018. Hey, there's a lot of hot spots in the world. Hey, first, as always, be part of the show. Email us at kl@kerrylutz.com and the Twitter feed's at Kerry Lutz. So hot spots around the world. We got Russia, we've got China, we've got Venezuela, we've got North Korea, we've got so many places. What's it going to look like in 2018? Well, Ivan Elin is with us from the Independent Institute. And Ivan, welcome back as always.
Thanks for having me on again, Kerry. How's it going?
We're hanging in, but hey, the year is fast ending, and just wondering what your thoughts are for the U.S. relationship-wise with all of these hot spots that don't seem to be wanting to go away.
Well, I think for the coming year, I think we need to deal with all these hot spots. We need to sort of look at our own perceptions and our own framework for looking at these places, and that would be going back to what Trump had originally said in his campaign, that he wanted to be, less involved in some of these places and, sort of keep the powder dry. That was his campaign slogan. But unfortunately, I think a lot of his advisors, the advisors who were in that school, have already been kind of summarily booted out or gotten into other trouble. And the ones who remain are the generals. And unfortunately, they're more conventional in their outlook. I think Trump was right, in his original, perception. I mean, yeah, way back when, when he was a businessman, probably 10 or 20 years ago, he was still leery of a lot of these places. He kind of waffled on some of the wars, but he was very suspicious, and he also thought the U.S. was, draining its economic power by, providing defense for a lot of wealthy countries, which, of course, we still are doing. So he was his major theme was they should pay more. Well, you might even be able to take it more than that, and that they should just do more for their own defense. We could come as a more of a second line of defense. And I think that's probably would solve a lot of these problems for us, because as Eisenhower used to say, oh, what are you going to do with this crisis or that crisis? He would say, well, it's not really a crisis. And here's, what we can do about it. And that, wasn't all that much.
Yeah, well, we've seen the limitations, and sometimes it's just better to let these guys blow up on their own. Look at Venezuela now. Now, there's a perfect example of we didn't go in there. Yeah, we've put in some sanctions, probably not very effective. The majority of the damage that's been done to the Venezuelans done by themselves. They're on the edge of collapse. In all likelihood, the system that comes after Maduro/Chavez is probably going to be a major improvement. And maybe that's what's going to happen to a lot of these other places that we really think about blowing up. We should just let them blow themselves up.
Well, I think, the classic case and Venezuela is similar to that, was Cuba. I mean, how long have the Castros lasted? How many presidents have they outlasted? And they used our hostility towards them. Remember, we tried to assassinate Castro. We had very tight sanctions on him for years. Of course, other countries didn't, and that was the problem. But we had all these symbolic things against Castro, and even some non-symbolic things. We tried to invade and overthrow him, assassinate him, et cetera. But he would always use the external enemy to blame his own economic problems, which were mainly caused not by the United States, but by the communist system, which, of course, we know doesn't work at all. And now we have another situation in Venezuela well, they're not a strictly communist country, but they're certainly going that direction. They have extreme socialism, and it's really the economy is just imploding. And of course, as you point out, they're headed for a revolution one way or another. And, you know, it's best to step out of the way when your enemies are imploding. So I see, you know, the same thing there. The Venezuelan government uses us as the external bogeyman as a reason why their economic policies have resulted in near collapse of the country.
Yeah, that's such a great point. And yeah, just let them do it themselves. I mean, we know what happens with these systems. It's always the same here, Ivan. I mean, it's worked this way throughout history. So we should just have confidence that it's going to. North Korea obviously presents a whole different scale of problem. What do you think is going to happen there? Supposedly the Chinese have now stopped shipping them oil.
Yeah, well, if that's true, that could really be a significant thing. Although sometimes, you know, sanctions can be cheated on, and the Chinese may have left some loopholes. You never know. We'll have to see how it's enforced. That's the key to those sanctions. The other, what I just said about Venezuela and Cuba, of course, can apply to North Korea. They use the U.S. as an external boogeyman, and for getting nuclear weapons, biological, chemical weapons, they waste all their money on this stuff. Meanwhile, their people are starving. So yeah. You can still treat them differently than Venezuela and Cuba by taking measures to deter them and to maybe even mess around with their nuclear program, such as we did with the Iranians and their nuclear programs through cyber stuff. I don't think an all-out military attack is going to work. And I don't think the military, U.S. military, thinks that either. But I think if you don't rise to the provocations, they have less of an external enemy to blame for their starvation in their country. So I think the same policy sort of might work to some extent. Now, I think with North Korea, you know, they may get North nuclear weapons that can hit the United States. So you've got to take some additional measures. But certainly, if you take them quietly and you don't rise to their bait all the time, and you let the South Koreans do more, the Chinese do more, those two countries, and the Japanese to do more,
sure.
U.S. needs to do less.
Yeah, hey, couldn't agree more. So Iran, you know, another situation of a country that really not in the best shape, a lot of problems, probably left to their own demise. At some point, the people are going to rise up there as well.
Yeah, I think eventually, of course, the Iranians have traditionally had more democracy than the other Middle East countries, despite the fact that they haven't gotten along with the U.S. Now, of course, you can't say that they're anywhere near a perfect democracy, but they do have some, you know, they elect their president and everything else. They don't have like kings or just autocratic rulers per se, right. Although their leader is certainly not a Democrat, the guy who really runs the countries. But there are some democratic tendencies in Iran that could rise over time. And I think their population is very young, and they really don't like their younger population is more prone to the U.S. than the older generation, of course, who still remember the U.S. Iran, tete-a-tete over the hostages and the entire reign of terror that the Shah had that the U.S. sponsored there. So I think basically Trump has decided that, you know, he's going to he needs to posture to be tough on Iran. But I think he'll probably keep the Iran nuclear agreement, which I think is a good thing because there's really no alternative. And I think the same policy that we have that we were citing in some of these other countries, if we just don't be an external boogeyman for them, we can certainly try to, you know, counter their influence. Although we have a lot of capable people, and, you know, in my keeping with my idea that we could save a lot of money, rejuvenate ourselves to be a long-term great power, because I think we're way overextended. We have 37% of the world's military spending, but about 22% of the GDP. So we're overextended trying to police the world. And of course, we don't have the money to satisfy all the commitments that we've made over time and alliances to protect other countries, if we would sort of drop back to a second line of defense. You know, if the balance of power gets out of whack in any one region, certainly we can come to their aid, as we did in World War II against the Nazis and the Japanese. But I think, you know, a lot of these other countries are wealthy. Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, Australia, in the East Asia. And of course, we have the EU, which has a bigger GDP than the United States and is vastly more wealthy than Russia, which has the GDP of, despite all the hype about Putin and his threat, he's only got the GDP less than Italy or Canada. So he has limited resources to work with. So I think, you know, if we rely on Israel and Saudi Arabia in that region to counter Iran, which they do quite nicely, really. I mean, Iran has more influence than it did a while back, but we should have. That was because we invaded Iraq, took out Saddam Hussein, who was Iran's biggest foe there.
Yeah.
And so naturally, Iran moved into Iraq, despite all the U.S. Lives that were lost there. And it's now moved into Yemen, you know, Syria and other places in the region as well. So, you know, so they are rising, but that's partly because we made that big blunder. But Israel and Saudi Arabia are countering them. And perhaps they should be the first line of defense. Israel is very wealthy, and so is Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, enough is enough. So finally, you mentioned Russia, and Russia, their economy really isn't great. The one good thing they have, and whether that's good or not, remains to be seen. They've got no external debt. There's no debt to any country. They paid off all of the sovereign debt in the country. But demographically, they look like they've arrested a few trends like declining population, perhaps gotten a handle on public health, alcoholism. But really, what's going to be with them? It looks like Trump's trying to angle for a better relationship in spite of all the neocons who are against it. Recently, the U.S. warned Putin of a potential terrorist attack in St. Petersburg. That's got to go some ways towards building up good faith, at least a working relationship between Trump and Putin, the U.S. and Russia.
Yeah, I think Trump's instinct there originally was better. We sort of have an anti-Russia phobia left over from the Cold War. And of course, their election shenanigans probably exacerbates that. And Russia, I think, does have to own up to that. And, you know, but if Trump said, well, listen, we want to have a good relationship in the long term, but this election thing, you know, still getting in the way. But we do have a rising enemy in common, China. I wouldn't call it an enemy, but a potential adversary, because it's not clear where China is going to go, or if it's going to implode, or it's going to become aggressive, which it hasn't been for 500 years. But certainly it's a rising power, and we probably need to cooperate with Russia to at least, counter that. And so the long-term interests of the U.S. and Russia coincide rather than go apart. But this election issue has flared up. And I think it's a legitimate issue to tackle with Putin. But I think that can be tackled, and then perhaps a better long-term relationship, as Trump wants. But I think somebody's got to tackle this election issue before that happens.
All right. Well, let's see what happens. Anyway, 2018, a lot of challenges, a lot of interesting opportunities. Perhaps the U.S.'s growth picture will accelerate because of the tax cuts and other things that are taking place, regulatory reform, which might free up some resources and allow the U.S. More flexibility. Anyway, Ivan, wish you the best of luck for the coming new year. Just tell us again, best place to find your work, your latest writing.
Well, it's at www.independent.org. So, and I also do some stuff with the Huffington Post. And also my I have a book called 11 Presidents, which just came out. And that talks about 11 presidents that promised us small government and how they did in fulfilling that promise.
That seems to be a perpetual promise. Well, certainly since Reagan, everybody's promised it. You know, it's kind of like everybody wants clean air and clean water, but nobody can figure out how to deliver it. You know, everyone wants great health care, but nobody can figure out how to pay for it. And I guess the book probably delves into that. I'm going to take a look at it during my couple of days off. We'll talk about it when I get back. Hey, send us an email. Be part of the show. KL@KerryLutz.com. Twitter feed @KerryLutz and the Facebook page Financial Survival Network. Ivan, have a great new year. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Happy New Year to you too, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.